Welcome to episode 182 of the Family Podcast Network. Semper Paratus.
Welcome to the Family Podcast Network, where we help you work with your tough kids and even those that aren't. Coming to you from Tuscola, Texas, home and headquarters of the Family Podcast Network. Here's your host, Trey Gibson.
Well, hello and welcome to this episode of the Family Podcast Network, helping you work with your tough kids and even those that aren't. The date today is December the 19th, 2012. Our topic for today is going to be a fantastic interview with Stephen Harris from KnowledgePublications.com. We're going to have him on today to talk a little bit about helping get our kids involved in preparedness. Now, you guys know from this show, I've never made it a secret that I'm big about preparation, about trying to stay prepared for things like Hurricane Sandy. Now, I know some people out there would argue, oh, Trey, there's no way that you could prepare for a major catastrophe like that. I'll give you this. You cannot control those things. You cannot make them stop. But I say most certainly you can stay prepared for at least the majority of things. So we're going to talk a little bit today about, you know, and we've talked a little bit about that in the past in terms of how do we produce resilient kids and whatnot. So today's going to be a little bit of a more laser-targeted approach, if you will, on how do we get our kids involved with these kind of preparations, just, you know, being ready for these types of things. And Steve is going to bring an amazing approach to how do we get kids involved with it. And he's going to hit several of the issues that I think are spot on in terms of how do we create familiarity, how do we create comfort, and how do we keep our kids from being worried if all of a sudden the lights don't come on. It is absolutely possible, and Steve's going to bring us some amazing things that we're going to go over on that. Before we do that, guys, let's get into our housekeeping for today. If you want to get updates on the topics that are going on over here at the Family Podcast Network, we put three of these out a day. Maybe you don't have time to sit down and go to the site and listen to all three. If you do not, and even if you do, this is one of the best ways to figure out what did Trey talk about today. What is the topic for the show as well? All you got to do is go to www.thefamilypodcastnetwork.com. Over there on the right side, you can enter your name and your email address, or in the new little green bar that's up at the very top of the page now, enter your name, enter your email, and you will make sure that you get the opportunity to get added to that list. So what happens is every time I put out a new show, you're going to get it in your email. Hey, here's what we talked about. It's very simple. It's clean. It doesn't try to sell you anything, nothing like that. It just says, hey, want to let you know there's an update. Here's what it's about. And it's going to give you the talking points for the day. It is great if you were busy and you don't necessarily have the opportunity to sit down and listen to every single one every single day. It's great for you Stitcher listeners out there who listen through Stitcher. Fantastic way to make sure that you can figure out what was said. Make sure you don't miss that episode. So that way next week you're not listening back and going, oh, dang it, if I just would have listened to that episode, this entire last week could have been completely different and much better. That's the way to make sure that that kind of thing never happens. Guys, we don't ever spam your email address. We don't like stuff like that. Uh-uh, no bueno for us. Guys, also consider liking us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Pinterest. I want to touch base with you guys. I want to interact with you guys. That's just kind of the way I am. I like to talk to people. I'm a high extrovert. I like visiting with people, so I want to hear from you guys. I want to say a personal thank you to everybody who's emailed in. And the conversations that have been garnished from that, I'm telling you guys, I have one of the most fantastic episode or audiences out there. I'm not trying to be fluffy or flu-flu or any of that other stuff. I'm dead serious. You guys rock. The conversations that you guys brought up, the questions that have been tossed about, I mean, I am thoroughly enjoying myself. So, guys, you can go over to Facebook, Twitter, all those other places. Facebook's really my primary place. If you want to get pictures of what goes on in Casa de Gibson, failures that we've had, funny stories, funny pictures, or just look at cute kids, it's the best place to go. That's where we talk a lot about it. Go check us out there. Guys, you can also check out our blog at www.thefamilypodcastnetwork.com/blog. Over there on the blog, you can our parenting, the parenting that I teach here is a two-part thing. It's half me and it's half my wife. My wife and I have put these ideas and perspectives together over the last 8 years of marriage. And so if you really want to hear it, you got to go over and check that out because my wife is actually the one who writes all the blogs. And so she also has the unique perspective that she's writing under how well does this stuff work when you're with your kid all day. We homeschool our kids. Our kids are with my wife all day. And you can hear how well do these mentalities work if you've got to be around them all day. because they do, and she follows up with that. Second off, my wife has got an amazing gift at writing in the written word. I'm telling you, you got to go check it out. She's funny. She's engaging. She gives great information. Go check it out. I'm not saying that just because she's my wife. If she stank, I'd say it. I really would. It's one of my personalities. So go check her out, thefamilypodcastnetwork.com/blog, or click on blog in the upper navigation bar on the website. Guys, also, if you want to support the show, 30 cents per episode. If you say to yourself, man, I really like this. I think this is great stuff. If you're saying that, you know, I think this is wonderful, and I want other people to be able to experience this, that's the way to do it. The way I roll is every one of these podcasts are always going to be free. I'm never going to charge for this. That's kind of the philanthropic, you know, perspective that I take at FPN. I'm committed to the long haul on paying for all of the hosting fees, all that other good stuff. I mean, that's on me. I want to present this and provide this to you guys. However, if you want to see this site grow, if you've got people that you're thinking, man, they could use this, I would like to expand this, that's one of the best ways to do it is support the show by being a PTACR. That stands for Parents for the Ethical Treatment of Adolescents and Kids. Just kind of a funny spin on PETA. You can support the show 30 cents. Seriously, 3 dimes. If you feel like you're getting 3 dimes for every one of these you listen to, consider signing up. It's cheap. You can do $5 a month. That, seriously, I know that sounds crazy. That helps me go a long ways in paying and helping expand the show and make it bigger and better. And you can do it through that, or you can pay on a yearly. If you you can do a yearly at $50 a month, and that's about a 13% savings if you do it that way. So consider supporting the show. Last, hey, you guys got any questions, comments, something you want to hear about? Something you're like, man, I wonder what Trey would say about this, or here's a situation that I've got that I wondered, or I saw a family the other day that was doing this. Is that the right thing? Or, hey, Trey, tell me what you think about this. I want to answer those questions. We want to make sure that we value your time here at the Family Podcast Network. So you can do that in several ways. Number one, you can email me, TreyGibson@thefamilypodcastnetwork.com. Put in there what you're talking about, topic suggestion or question for you and those kinds of things. You also can go to the actual website over there, and in the upper bar up there, you can click on Contact Us. And inside there, you can do a general contact form, leave me feedback, tell me what you think. I'm telling you guys, when y'all tell me how much you love or hate the show, and hate, I'm serious, I it's good for me. I love getting those kinds of feedback. You can also do topic suggestion, or you can also leave an internet voicemail over on the right hand side. Ask Trey a question. Click on that. As long as you've got a microphone on your computer, you can leave me a small voicemail that will probably air on the show. Get your question answered. I love to do that. All right, guys, with all of that said, let's go ahead and jump to our topic for today, which again is going to be our interview with Steve Harris over at knowledgepublications.com. Let me tell you, this guy has impressed me. You guys know I listen to the Survival Podcast, listened for years, got to get interviewed on there a while back, and it was probably one of the most neat experiences I've had. But I've listened to Steve Harris since he did his very first one several years ago. And Steve, I think, has been on about 13 different times on this Survival Podcast. And so I've been thoroughly impressed with his information. What he gives is practical and easy to act on. And that those are two major things that with where we are in our life, we need. And Steve offers some absolutely incredible information and knowledge that, I will be honest, I have probably started doing maybe 3 out of every 4 things that he's ever suggested, because I thought, man, that's good, and it's easy, and it's inexpensive. And so we're going to have him on today to talk a little bit about what do we need. Okay, so yeah, do we need to be getting ready for major things as parents? Of course we do. Do we need to acknowledge the fact that Hurricane Sandy comes, that power grids can drop because one transformer — we're going to talk a little bit about that in the interview today — but we had one transformer pop at our house, and we lost power for quite a while. And so, I mean, that's it doesn't seem like a big deal, but it's amazing how much it can change things when that happens. And so, you know me, guys, I'm big with that and talking about that by myself, but how do we get our kids involved? And Steve's going to bring us some amazing suggestions on how we can get kids involved in such a way where they don't panic, they don't freak out, they don't get worried. As a matter of fact, they're expecting and even ready for the possibility that something can happen. Steve brings some amazing suggestions today. A little bit about Steve. Steve is a consultant and expert in the field of energy. He is the founder and CEO of Knowledge Publications, the largest energy-only publishing company in the U.S. Mr. Harris came to his current position to do full-time work on the development and implementation of hydrogen, biomass, and solar-related energy systems after spending 10 years in the Aerothermal Dynamics Department of Scientific Labs of Chrysler Corporation, where he was a pioneer member of a group that developed and implemented successful speed-to-market development concepts. Steve is an expert in family preparedness, and with his online MP3 class, he listed over 200,000 downloads and is an expert on energy and preparedness. Guys, we're going to have Steve Harris on. Steve, great to have you on the show today.
Trey, I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, I tell you what, Steve, we've done a few things, especially after we had the issue with Hurricane Sandy come through. You know, we've put out some episodes on Family Podcast Network about, you know, being prepared as a family and how important it is, because the reality is that, I mean, bad stuff happens. I mean, stuff that is huge that we can't just, you know, that are going to throw our entire life off its rocker. And so a lot of parents, you know, often get into the thought process of, okay, what can I do? What can I, you know, how can I handle working with this stuff? How can I make things happen even whenever, let's say, the lights go out because Hurricane Sandy hits and now we don't have any power and we're sitting in our house. You know, we're safe now, but we don't know what we're going to do. The refrigerator's not running. We can't start a stove and those kinds of things. What are we going to do? So a lot of parents get into that mentality. And we're going to hit a little bit on that as well. But today we're also going to talk a smidge about how do we get our kids involved with this? Because the reality is there are people that are involved with this as well. There are kids that who have had a routine, that have been doing things a certain way for the last however many years of their lives without very many huge interruptions like this might be. So we're going to talk some today about how do we do these things. Before we get into that, Steve, just tell us a little bit about yourself. Who are you? Where are you from? What do you do? All that other kind of stuff.
Boy, gee, we got 2 hours here. Quick background on Steve Harris. I have been in energy in my entire life. Live, eat, breathe, study energy. People ask me, when did I start loving energy and studying it? And I said, second grade. you know, my background is electrical engineering. That's what my college was for.
Right.
And I just ate up anything electronics, electricity. And in the early 1990, I went to work for Chrysler Corporation. I was a research and development engineer in the scientific labs doing vehicle development for a Jeep and truck engineering facility. So I did that from 1990 to 2000, and that gave me an incredible education on vehicles. I mean, beyond comprehension, what people know and think about vehicles, working on the inside for 10 years will do a lot for you. So I got exposed to all the internal combustion engine fundamentals, fueling. I worked with the electric vehicle program. I worked with the guys on natural gas. I worked in thermodynamics. So I had a great deal of vehicle expertise from there. And I left Chrysler in 2000. It was 2 years after Der Daimler came in and made it Daimler Chrysler. And that was going to be a little bit of a headache. So I left to go independent so I could consult in the energy field doing hydrogen generation, fuel cells, solar thermal, wind power, biomass power, especially biogas is something that's one of my favorites. I've done a lot of work with that. I had so many people. I was building this library of books. I had so many people that just loved my library of books. I said, well, I'm going to start printing and publishing these things and selling them to other people because so many people want them.
Yeah.
So I started a company called Knowledge Publications. And Knowledge Publications republishes the best books there ever was on energy. And it's all the subjects that I mentioned. It's all DIY, hands-on stuff. If you want to do solar heating, solar cooking, if you want to do natural cooling of the house or active cooling, if you want to do make a wind generator, if you want to do anything in the field, I got the book on the subject. So I'm just inundated living, eating, and breathing energy my entire life. And then in the 1990s, I had civil defense concerns, and I started volunteering with an organization called Doctors for Disaster Preparedness. Hmm. And many of the older members there mentored me in preparedness and taught me all sorts of things that you'd want to know about nuclear, chemical, biological. But I mean, the big thing is like we have a nuke goes kaboom blows a city. It's not really, there's an initial nuclear effect and fire and buildings blown down, but the end result is it takes down the grid.
Yeah.
And then you start getting into mass casualties from people who are suffering because they don't have transportation, they don't have electricity, they can't get to the hospital, the hospital's overwhelmed, they don't have basic sanitation, they don't have fresh water, that's what happens when the grid goes down. You lose everything You got so many things in your life that makes your life easy. You got an automatic refrigerator, an automatic ice maker. You got an automatic oven. You have an automatic microwave. You have an automatic dishwasher. You have an automatic washer. You have an automatic dryer. And all this stuff, an automatic furnace, an automatic air conditioner. And all this stuff makes our life very convenient. It saves us a fabulous amount of time that allows us to use that time elsewhere. Well, when there's a big bang and the power goes out, everything that was automatic just became manual, which is what I love. People say, oh, I don't need to use that now or play with that now. I can read the manual and we can do it when there's a power failure or a disaster because I'll have plenty of time. No, you are pretty busy in a disaster, or you can be. I went through the blackout of 2003. I was in Michigan. That affected the entire Northeast. It was 50 million people dark for about 3 days. You couldn't drive your car on a full tank of gas far enough to find a place that had gasoline.
Yeah. Yeah.
To refill, so you're stuck exactly where you are when this stuff happens. And I wrote a book on it called Surviving the Blackout of 2003. And in fact, you can get a free copy of that book if you go to my, where is it? It's on solar1234.com right now. And if you're on the site for 45 seconds, you'll get a pop-up window that's going to pop up, and you just enter your name and your email. And it will give you a free copy of Surviving the Blackout of 2003, which is a short book. And it's a fun read. And it's all hands-on. And it'll teach you a whole bunch of good stuff. I got a tremendous number of resources for all you guys listening. I mean, I have shows I've done with Jack Spierko on the Survival Podcast. I got 15 shows I've done.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Each one on a different subject. Each one ready for you to listen to at a mere click. So I was saying, when I started dealing with the issues of nuclear, chemical, biological attacks, I mean, basically what it does is it brings down your system. So you start looking at how do you store food? Mm. How do you store water? How do you purify water? What are the issues? What are the issues in our diet? What do we really need? What's the first thing that's going to affect you? And the entire psychology and mindset behind preparedness, and what do you really need to know? What do you need to do? So I developed that in the 1990s, and I extended continuing to do preparedness through the 2000s. In fact, I was part of the Warren Police CERT team, which is the Community Emergency Response Team. That sometimes CERT teams are like SWAT teams, but we were the community team. We weren't the SWAT team. And we would assist the police department. We went through classes and everything else, and we assisted the police department. And I became the instructor for preparedness for the CERT teams. And so I taught a class. I taught quite a few classes, but one of them I recorded. And it was like I nailed that class. I nailed it so perfectly.
Yeah, it was good.
And you've heard it in teaching preparedness. Mm-hmm. The audience was interactive and everything else. And so I recorded that class, and that class is available for anyone to listen to. It's also at solar1234.com. The sign up for it is on the right hand side. And it's got the fundamentals in it of how you need to start. I don't believe in MREs. I don't believe in dehydrated foods. I don't believe in weird survival gadgets. Everything has to be available to you right now and easily available to you. I want it off the shelf of Walmart and your grocery store.
Yeah.
And this is with what I teach you preparedness is with these things. And they're very inexpensive. You can buy in bulk at Costco for flour and other such things. And we teach you these mechanisms of how to instantly make, for example, bread. By a variety of different methods. And so you can have a really good staple food in a disaster. Believe it or not, it's very easy to have fresh hot bread in a disaster. And there's nothing really more comforting and providing security to someone than to smell fresh hot bread being baked and coming out in 2-pound loaf in 58 minutes. And kids will love it. You can put peanut butter and jelly on it. It'll be a very familiar thing and a great stress reducer.
Well, I think you're bringing up some really good points, too. First off, guys, I want to make sure that all the audience hears me say today, I highly endorse the Surviving the Blackout of 2003. I have read that. It's a great book. Also, one of the first things, Steve, that I heard of yours outside of the – I heard an interview with you on the Family Podcast Network about a year ago. And so I went to your site and checked it out. And so, guys, to the audience, go check out that family preparedness class that he offers up there. There is really good – easy to perform actionable information on that. And I'll be honest, the minute that I heard that, I started working on that, and it is fantastically easy. You don't have to go to websites that are weird, that leave you going, what the heck do I? It's stuff that you'll recognize right there, easy to find, and Steve sets it up to make it real easy to get to it as well. So I do highly recommend those. You know, you brought up a point, Steve, that I think is really good, and that's, you said the word familiar in there, and I think that's one of the things that we often forget about when it comes to, you know, intense situations, when things go wrong. I mean, we get used to, humans especially are very routinized beings. We seem to like routine. You know, that doesn't mean we don't like to break from routine, but we get used to having things. We get used to rolling out of our beds and unplugging our iPhones that we charged overnight and flipping on the light and going and starting the coffee up and all these things that are familiar that create comfort for us. I think we sometimes forget that. You lose, if the electricity goes down, even just these rolling blackouts like they've talked about in California, or Hurricane Sandy coming through and knocking it out, what finally got me to really going and checking out that that family preparedness class was, here in Texas, we were having wildfires during that time. And yeah, we were getting to a point where power stations were burning up and power was dropping, and they were saying, you know, 2-3 weeks before we were looking at getting power back up, what are we going to do, you know? And that, I mean, that was a real threat for us here. And so it kind of got my mind thinking, okay, what are we going to do? So whenever these situations come up, we lose a lot of those things that are familiar to us, that we've gotten used to having. And that can be especially devastating for kiddos, too, when they're used to waking up and having a bowl of cereal with their ice-cold milk that they pulled out of the refrigerator. And so there's a lot of these things that we've got to be thinking about. And I think you bring up a really good point. Food is absolutely used, especially in America, for a comfort piece. And so, you know, as I was thinking about this, one of the questions that I wanted to ask you was, how do we teach kids about food during disasters, like with these situations we talked about, and what do we feed them?
Well, the best thing you can do is you can start integrating what you would do in a disaster into part of their daily life on a semi-infrequent or frequent basis.
Yeah.
And you ask, well, what do you mean? What are you going to do? And it's like, well, there's a tremendous number of things that you can do. One of the things that I teach is I teach you how to power your house from your car, because your car is a great big generator sitting outside.
Yeah.
And you already have one, two, or three of them. I teach you how to put an inverter on your car and how to use that inverter to power basic things in your house. So before I get into refrigerators and freezers, you basically don't need to power your refrigerator and freezer. It's got 2 days worth of food in it, and it'll stay cold for 2 days. Nevertheless, I do cover that. I have a whole class called How to Power Your House from Your Car. It's at solar1234.com as well. You can just tap on it with your cell phone. You can listen to it. But you have a small amount of power from your car that you can do useful things with. And one of the things that is very useful is a bread maker, and I mean a new bread maker, a two-pound loaf in 58 minutes. Not one of the old ones that takes 3 hours to bake a loaf of bread. I'm talking about one that takes 58 minutes, and one of my favorite ones is the Oster Cool Touch, and it's like $49 on Amazon right now, and I have everything I'm talking about is listed at solar1234.com. You can go there, and you can see pictures of everything I'm talking about, every item I'm mentioning. You can click on the link, and you can go to Amazon and buy it if you want, or you can go to Walmart and say, okay, I know what that one. You can go to Walmart and buy it, et cetera. But the real thing that's going to be a shocker to most people is, like, one of my favorite things to use during a disaster is a bread maker, because it instantaneously is making something that is no longer on the store shelf and you can't get. And I have a whole video on making bread from your car. It's called Bread from Gasoline, but I'm going to rename it to something else. But I make 32 pounds of bread off of 1 gallon of gasoline and a small generator.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a pretty good trade-off.
Okay? That's cool.
$4 worth of gasoline, just made 32 pounds worth of bread. And I make the bread from nothing but flour, sugar, salt, water, and a little bit of oil and yeast. That's it. Okay.
Yeah. All stuff you got around the house.
No milk, no butter. And then what? Flour is easy to store. Flour is cheap. And as they say, well, it's so unnutritious that bugs won't eat it. You know, when you're going to store a staple away for something you're going to eat, bugs not wanting to eat it is a pretty darn good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think that's a very good argument anyway. I mean, if you're sitting in a house with no food in it, I can guarantee you're not going to care very much about the long-term organic nutritional value of something if you're watching your kiddos that are hungry.
Yeah, and we need to back up a little bit and say nutrition, throw it out the door, okay? Forget nutrition. You do not need a nutritious diet in a disaster, even if it's a month long. You need calories. You need to stop from being hungry. You need energy to do things.
Yeah.
Your body is so filled full of nutrients from an American diet that it would take you about 3 months. It would take you about 3 months just to develop the initial symptoms of scurvy from vitamin C deficiency. And that's cured by taking one penny a day multivitamin will take care of that.
Yeah.
So as we're saying about bread, is make bread in the bread maker with the kids, for the kids, like once a week or once every 2 weeks. You can make it every day if you so desire. It's a great thing for saving money to make your own bread in a bread maker. As I say, using a bread maker is like using a washing machine. All you do is put the stuff in, close the lid, and press go, and it takes care of itself automatically. So there's something you can do on a regular basis with the kids. And so when you're making bread from the battery in the car during a disaster, and it's coming out in 58 minutes, so the kids are going, yay, Mom made bread. And it's not like, what's this or what's that? It's yay, good stuff. And you get out the peanut butter and jelly, and you now have something that the kids are very familiar with and they're used to. The other thing is there's all sorts of other types of cooking that you can use white flour with that are very good for children that you can integrate into their daily life. Once a week or two, you can make lunch for them, and you're making white flour tortillas. Now, if you can make these on your stove, if you have a natural gas stove in your house, natural gas is not going to go off in a disaster. That surprises most people. What probably won't work is the auto start on your stove, so you might have to have a match it, light the stove. If you have an electric stove, an all-electric house, well, then you need to have a propane stove or a Coleman fuel type of camping stove that you can cook on. You can use it inside just fine. Just don't fill it up with Coleman fuel inside and then bring it inside, but you can use it inside. Propane's probably easier to go with. So you're cooking on top of a stove, and you make white flour tortillas. Now, I tell you in detail how to make white flour tortillas in the family preparedness class. And in fact, I got a whole video on making white flour tortillas. I should move that over. It's like a 3-minute video. I should move it over to solder1234.com. But white flour tortillas, the recipe is basically a scoop of flour, a dollop of oil, and a couple pinches of salt, and then enough water to form a dough. And you roll up the dough, and then you put it down on your counter, and you take a wine bottle. Because, you know, you might not have a bread roller, but anything like a wine bottle or a soda bottle will work. And you roll it out into a thin dough. And you throw it onto a moderately hot plate, skillet. And the heat can vary. If it's cooler, it just takes longer to cook. If it's really hot, it cooks real quickly. And you throw the real thin tortilla onto it. Give it about 15 seconds on one side, or just until it's brown and turning a little black, flip it over to the other side, and you're making white flour tortillas instantaneously. And this is what I call instant emergency bread. Now, you can use this to feed the kids lunch or dinner or whatever you so desire. You can use tortillas with rice, and beans. You can put peanut butter and jelly on them. You can put honey with them. You can eat them raw. They're quite flavorful, despite being made of only oil, white flour, water, and salt. Salt gives them a nice flavor to them, and kids like them. Even fussy kids will eat white flour tortillas. And again, it's something that you can do on a semi-regular basis that they are used to having. So when you are going to your emergency food reserves in a blackout, and you might be going and doing this on day 3 or day 4 because you might have 2 days worth of bread in the house already. There might be some in your freezer. When I go to the grocery store, I don't buy one. I buy 4 of stuff, and I throw them in the freezer because I just don't want to spend the time and the diesel fuel to go back to the store to get another loaf of bread.
Yeah.
So like the old saying goes, why buy one when you can have 2 at twice the price? Especially if they're on sale. It makes only sense to do. So you might already have a couple days worth of bread within the house and other food and before you start going to your emergency stores. But then again, it's something that the kids have eaten with you and they're familiar with.
You know, I'll tell you, Steve, we started practicing that. I heard you mention that a while back. And so, you know, we started that with our kids, just making the tortillas. And, you know, we got the kids actively involved with it because, you know, for us, it was sitting down, it was making it. I had them help roll it. And so for them, it was associating, you know, very positive things with, oh, we get to make tortillas with Daddy today. And so they sat down. They loved it. They had such a great time making it. And we cooked them up. We threw some syrup out there with them, and they could just dip it in the syrup and eat it. And so for them, it was – I mean, they associated really good things with doing it this way. Now, that was also – I mean, it was one part to build relationship with kids. Yeah, that's, you know, that was a big part of it. But the other part of it is very strategic as well, because I want them to associate that if it ever gets to a point to where maybe the lights do go out – pulling this up will also be we get to make these emergency tortillas with Daddy. And so for them, it also became a very good thing. And so I think what you're suggesting is brilliant because, again, starting it out, doing it before things go awry allows kids to say – to not see this as, oh, my gosh, things are going wrong and we're having to do this. But for them, it's actually – there's an element of comfortability with it.
Yeah, a great deal of comfortability with it. Plus, if you teach your kids how to make white flour tortillas – they will never be hungry for the rest of their life.
Yeah.
They can be a panhandler underneath the overpass, and they won't have to go to the homeless shelter and be dependent upon food from them. They'll be able to go get a little bit of white flour, a little bit of oil and salt, and get a skillet from any place, Salvation Army, thrift store. Yeah, and they'll be making tortillas on a three-rock fire. So these are really good skills, and they could be in college, and something's happening in college, and there's a problem. They go to the grocery store, and I got pictures of the grocery stores during the blackout, during Sandy, during various anything else, and I got photographs of the bread aisle just being wiped out.
There's
nothing there. And then I go over and I take pictures. I go check the aisle with the flour and the oil and the salt and the sugar. And Sandy was before Halloween, so there's Halloween and candies being made. And there were literally pallets of sugar at Walmart in the middle of the aisle
for good
baking. And there was more than enough sugar to put anyone into diabetic shock. So if your kids, you know, say something happens, an earthquake happens, or a hurricane is coming, but it's only class 1 or class 2. So your kids are in college. So they're in Houston. They're going to stay there. And everyone else beats them to the store. They are smart enough to know what to go get in the store so they can make the things that they need to make to stay fed. They're not dependent upon the man, the system, the infrastructure, providing them with everything that they need to open up and eat. They know how to make something and eat it. Even if they're going to get bored with it, big deal, they're going to be fed and they'll be able to feed their classmates at the same time.
Yeah, I like that. You know, one of the things that I love about your approach with all of this is how I mean, a lot of the survival preparedness stuff that's out there. And first off, I want one of everything I've ever seen, it seems. But, you know, a lot of it's expensive. You know, it's specialty. And again, I think it's got a place. There's several of those things that I want. One of the reasons why I encourage my audience to go check you out is that these are things that you can get off of, like you said, Amazon. And if you've got an Amazon Prime account, I mean, I ordered something through that you had recommended, an inverter through you, and I had it within 2 days. And so that's one of the reasons why I kind of suggest people go check you out, because, you know, it's not specialty items. It's things that you can get in a store that's just down the street from you, and it's really good. One of the other things that to me was almost just kind of iconoclastic, completely against the grain, was this idea. You know, in my mind, I'm thinking, okay, I've got to have a generator. I've got to have this generator. I've got to have the ability to keep the lights on, because that's, you know, that's a big part of helping keep kids feeling calm and feeling safe. But your suggestion is use your car as one. And I never considered that, but there's no reason why it couldn't effectively be used as one. So, you know, that got me to thinking about, okay, you know, maybe we could do this. We could use the car as that. We could power it through that. You know, we can keep keep the stove on, keep the refrigerator going, and even in some cases, you know, we could be able to charge the computers at night so that way we can still watch movies on the computers and those kinds of things. And so it kind of got me thinking, okay, let's introduce the audience to this and get folks into this. So you suggest, you know, making the emergency flour tortillas and stuff like that. We've kind of already hit through how we do that. Just real quick question I had for you. How do you store flour?
Oh, that's really easy. You go to the grocery store and you can get a choice. You can either buy it by 25 or 50 pound bags at Costco, or many times you can go to Aldi's and you can get flour in 5 pound bags for the same price as you would at Costco by 25 pound bags. And the way you store flour is, well, there's a whole bunch of different ways, I'll tell you. If you got the smaller bags, you take those bags and you wrap them up in a plastic bag, like a trash bag, and you seal it. And then almost any bag of flour you get, you put it in, first thing you do is you put it into another bag and you seal it. And then the question is, well, what do you put it in? Well, one of the things that's probably the easiest to put it into is a tote.
Yeah.
Like a 22-gallon tote.
Yeah, that's what we do.
What I do, well, remember, the totes have vent holes underneath their handles, and they're not airtight. So you want an airtight seal, and you want to – the thing that degrades flour and over time is oxygen and water vapor.
Interesting.
Those are two things that degrade it. Other than that, it's going to store basically forever. People say, well, it's going to go rancid. Bugs are going to go get it. No, there's no bugs already in the flour. There's no weevils in the flour. It's too finely ground and it's already processed such that they're not in there. Now, if you get corn, they're in there, but white flour, no. So I'll put them into totes, and then I'll take duct tape or Gorilla tape and I'll tape up all the edges of the tote. And I'll tape up the open holes underneath the handle. So I now have a completely airtight container for my flour. And one of the things that you can do is there's these things called oxygen absorbers that you can buy on Amazon and other places. And what you do is you open them up and you throw them in there. And they absorb the oxygen that's left in the tub. And they also, since they're sensitive to oxygen, they're also sensitive to moisture, so any moisture in there combines with the oxygen absorber, so everything in there stays really dry. Well, what these things what you might know these things better as are hand warmers.
Yeah, so yeah.
You can go get a hand warmer, like a small one for your hand, and they're like two for a dollar at the, not the hardware store, two for a dollar at the sporting goods store. And you throw one of them into the tub and you seal the thing up. What they are is finely divided iron. And that finely divided iron is reacting with the oxygen to make iron oxide and heat. That's what makes a hand warmer warm.
Interesting.
They will also combine with humidity in the air to make iron oxide and heat. Real finely divided iron is very, very chemically active, because it's got a very high surface volume ratio. You can actually make iron so fine, iron powder so fine, like what they use for making magnetic tapes. that you can, if you poured it, if you opened a bottle of it, it would literally glow red because it's oxidizing with the air so quickly. That's microfine, ultrafine iron. You're not really going to find that anywhere. The hand warmers aren't going to explode on you or anything. But that's just a little side note about iron and what it can do chemically. So they have finally divided iron in these hand warmers and in the oxygen absorbers, and they absorb the oxygen. And this makes it such that you can put away the flour and you can forget about it. And it'll store forever, 5 years, 10 years, longer. I got flour that's over 15 years. And I routinely go back and pull out a bag and test it, make some stuff with it. And it's perfectly fine, and it's going to stay fine. And that's what I like about some preparedness is put it away and forget it.
You know, I've looked into the O2, you know, the O2 absorbers before, and really I don't necessarily have a problem with their prices, but it most of the places I've seen, you have to buy one bag of several of them. So it's kind of like once you pop the bag open, it seems you got to use them all, or else they're, you know, I mean, they're exposed to the oxygen now, and they're already absorbing, and their usefulness is kind of, I mean, it's getting used up then. So I like this idea of using the hand warmers. I think that's a fantastic idea because they do come in pairs typically, you know, and I think that's a great idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you can also use 5-gallon pails from Lowe's or Home Depot. Those are really cheap now compared to what they used to be. You can put 5-pound bags of flour in there. You can take a 25-pound bag of flour and you can just pour the thing in there, throw in an oxygen absorber, seal it up, and it's stored for you. So when you go to use it, you just open it up and you have 5 gallons of flour sitting right in the bucket. You can do that. That will work good for you as well. That's more of the traditional way of storing. And everyone else is going to tell you, oh, you got to have wheat and stuff. And you know, wheat has better nutrition, blah, blah, blah. Like we already talked about, you don't need nutrition. And you don't need to have wheat. You don't need to have a hand wheat grinder. You don't need to make wheat bread during a disaster. If you want make wheat bread on a regular basis, and you want to make wheat bread in a disaster, that's fine. But in general, unless you're a wheat bread eater, making wheat bread during a disaster, you're not going to like it. And yeah, probably you're not going to have enough toilet paper for the end result.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. So, Steve, we spent a little time talking about the what we can eat and those different kinds of things. And so let's shift subject just a little bit towards power. So power drops off for whatever reason. We've talked about several different reasons that can happen, and really there's been actionable things that kind of prove that it is happening right now. So how do we teach kids about when the power is out, what to expect, what to know, and how can we make them comfortable whenever the lights are off?
Well, one of my favorite things I like kids to learn is how to recharge AA batteries. And I have a great AA charger. I mean, I literally have dozens of different AA chargers. I can make a museum of AA battery chargers just by going into my stores and pulling out. I was like, yeah, I got this one in 1995, this one in 1998, this one in 2000. You can see the evolution of them. Well, one of the best ones out there is a company called PowerX, and it charges 8 at a time individually. So you don't have to have them in pairs and everything else. And it'll charge up to 8 batteries in 2 hours. Whether it's 1 battery or 8 batteries, done in at most 2 hours. Usually done a lot quicker. And I have that up on solar1234.com. Everyone who gets it raves about it. Everyone who gets it loves it. If you buy one of these cheap Energizer AA chargers in the store, you're going to probably not like it. It'll probably take 8 hours to charge something. You probably got to charge it in pairs. So having a good AA charger that the kids can use is good because this thing just sits there and it's got 8 open slots on the top, no cover, and they can just drop in the AA battery into the charger. And the best AA nickel metal hydride rechargeable batteries on the market are the Sanyo Enloops, E-N-E-L-O-O-P-S. Again, if you want to see these, they're over on solar1234.com. I recommend you get a bunch of them. Get 20 of them. And what you do is the kids are now in charge of all batteries in the house.
I like that.
The kids are – you're going to put these batteries into your remote controls. You're going to put them into your mice. You're going to put them into whatever in your house uses AA batteries. And you'll, in your, it's like your AA batteries die in something. You tell your child, he goes and pulls them out. He goes and puts them in the charger. An hour or so later, he goes and pulls them out and puts them back, or he puts fresh ones in and recharges the other ones. You use these batteries in all their toys. The kids know how to take the batteries in and out of the toy. They know how to put them into the charger. They don't have to come to you and have you recharge the batteries for them. It becomes their job to recharge the AA batteries and make sure they have a couple of their favorite flashlights mm-hmm. that use AA or AAA batteries, be it a headlamp or be it a little mag light, AA light, something for them to play with that they enjoy and they like and they can leave on at night. Hey, the batteries are rechargeable. If they want to leave them on all night, that's fine. So they're intimate. What the thing is, the children are now intimately familiar with on a regular basis of what is recharging a AA battery. And they already have their favorite light. They've already played with their light for hundreds of hours or left it on all night. They've already taken it camping to their friend's house and done everything. They're intimately familiar with what that light is going to do for them and what they can do with that light. So when the power fails, them recharging AA batteries. You say, well, what are you recharging the batteries off of? Well, you're recharging the batteries off the inverter that's on your car. Your car battery will recharge probably about 300 AA batteries without even thinking about it.
Fascinating.
So you integrate this into their daily life. They're in charge of the batteries. And it's like, well, the TV's not working during the blackout because your big 50-inch or 60-inch TV, you don't want to power up with an inverter. You want to power up something smaller, like a 28-inch, a 20-inch, 19-inch, better yet, a 12-inch or 9-inch TV. I actually have a little 7-inch TV that only uses 9 watts of power. That's my emergency television. I got a set of rabbit ears for the thing. It pulls in many stations and everything. So the kids need more batteries. It's like, okay, I know where there's batteries. There's batteries in the remote control for the DVD player. And so they need some more batteries. They go pull them out of there. They go charge them up. They put them in their flashlight. And they'll come up to you and say, here you go, Daddy. Here's a flashlight. You want to use mine. And this is what you do with them. And now if you want to know some good AA and AAA flashlights, I have them all listed on solar1234.com. These are my favorites. They're bulletproof. They're childproof. They can be beat up, dropped, kicked around. A couple of them are mag lights. One of them is actually a headlamp from Energizer, and it actually clicks on and off instead of like having a little button that's taking power, waiting for you to turn it on. It clicks on and off. You can see all these and more up there, and this is a good place to start. And it's like, what kid doesn't like a flashlight?
You know, funny that you say that, too. You know, we started doing that, I guess, probably about 3 or 4 months ago, and we went and found just some just little Energizer flashlights. They run off of AA batteries, and they've got the standard LED flashlight that faces forward, and then it's also got the other end is colored in like a different color, and we've got like red for one, blue and green for each individual kid, so they each know what their color is, and then when you click it enough, it'll light up kind of like the handle of the flashlight, and it turns a different color, and they love that, especially my littlest. My 2-year-old loves that thing. She takes it with her everywhere, even when we went on a trip for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
She remembered at the last second, 2 years old, ran back in that room and grabbed that flashlight, and she came back out. She had a little sweater on because it was cool, and she had it sticking in that little sweater. Of course, you know, she's a tiny little 2-year-old, so it was sticking out of both ends of that pocket, but she came back out with that and took it with her, and then went that night. You know, I mean, sleeping in a new place, especially for little kids, kind of it puts them off for a little bit at the start, but you know what I noticed was that she had that flashlight on, and it was clicked on, and she was asleep, and she had it, you know, pulled up against her chest, and I think you're spot on with that. Too is having that available, getting something that they can have is, I mean, you could call it a security blanket, if you will, if you want to use kind of the general term for it, but that's what they become. And my oldest daughter she's 6, about to be 7, and she puts hers, and she came in the other day, and she had this little pink purse thing that said, look, Dad, here's my bug out bag, and she had put hers inside that. But I think this is such a good suggestion on getting kids involved with that. It creates that comfortability. So let's move on here. So thinking about all this and talking about – so now let's just kind of get a little more general. what can we do to teach kids on how to store things for preparedness? So how do we get our kids involved with getting prepared, getting them thinking about things that they can do? I pulled my kids in on a meeting about this about, I guess, probably 9 or 10 months ago. And I said, all right, guys, let's talk about – and we, you know, we talked about some things that have been happening at that time, and there's some families that don't have power. So I said, what do you guys think that we should be prepared for? And I, Steve, I was amazed at the answers they came up with. Things that I never would have thought of, things that I never would have come up. Like one of my sons suggested we should put Uno in our bags that we can have. So if the power goes out, we can know where our games are. And I had never considered that because in reality, I mean, things go – I mean, you lose the TV. You lose all the things that they're used to having going on during the day. And the next thing you know, what are you going to do? Well, getting bored is going to be a real easy thing. And so he said, let's put games in these bags here so we can have our – he called it like his game bag or something like that. And I thought that that was brilliant. So how do we teach kids? How do we get kids involved in storing things and just even the daily things that kind of help them out whenever there's disasters?
Well, that is a really, really good question. And there are so many different ways of doing this. And one of the ways is having them helping you with your preparedness. So in your house, do you drink any soda, any juices? Do you drink anything that comes in bottles in your house?
Yeah, absolutely. We've gotten away from like fruit juice and stuff like that, but we keep occasional sodas in the house.
Okay. So are they in 2-liter bottles, 1-liter bottles, half liter bottles, cans?
Typically the little small pint size, we keep those little guys, and then sometimes we'll keep canned stuff.
Okay, well, reuse is a really good thing. One of my favorite ones are the 3-liter soda bottles. I drink Diet Cola when I'm working and stuff, so I used to have a large collection of these. And you might have fruit juices, and this might be something you drink on a daily basis or a weekly basis, but either way, those empty bottles start to pile up. And what your kids have to learn to do is when a bottle becomes empty is that they take it to the sink and they rinse it out and then they let it dry. Because what you can do is, I mentioned storing flour, and or you can store rice, you can store beans. One of the good things to store these things are in plastic bottles. They're very durable. They're free. You're throwing them out anyways. They're airtight. And so the kids will learn this habit of, okay, you know, mom, here I have another bottle for you. And the next time you're at the store or whatever, you can say, oh, we're going to get some beans to put into the bottle. And you can buy these in bulk or you can buy them a pound at a time. I mean, generally, it's a staple. So it's cheap no matter how you build it.
Yeah.
So it's not like a thunderstorm dousing you with rain for preparedness. It's a slow, gentle, it's lightly raining. It's the individual drops that fill up the bucket over a long period of time and not the deluge. So your preparedness doesn't have to, you don't go and have to buy 100 pounds of beans. Yeah. You can buy a pound at a time and you can put them into soda bottles.
Yeah.
The other thing soda bottles or juice bottles are great for is for storing water. Mm. You just rinse them out, clean them up, put regular tap water in it. I don't care if it's from a well. I don't care if it's from the city. You do not need to put anything into it at all. You don't need to put any chlorine in it. You don't need to put any bleach in it. Just fill up the bottle, screw on the cap, and put it on the shelf and have this be part of their routine where they're helping you do this. This is developing good habits of storing food and water. And so if something happens and they're thirsty, they're automatically going to know where to go to get a bottle of fresh, cool water. And again, it's not something that you have to buy. You don't have to buy bottles of water and store them. This is by far a better solution. It's more hands-on, it's cheaper, and it gets them to be a participant in what you're doing.
Yeah, no, I think that's really, you know, we started doing that, I guess, probably about 2 years ago. And, you know, when you start doing, you know, you mentioned the incremental versus the deluge. I like that metaphor. And, you know, we started doing it, and there was a small part of me that as I was, you know, we would, you know, drink a soda, we would empty it out, I would clean it, and then we'd put water in it, and then I would stick it in the back room for me to eventually move out till we have a very cool storage building out there, and we were going to move it out there secondarily. And I remember thinking to myself, I mean, is this really, I mean, how effective is this? Should I not just start saving up money and buy, you know, huge 55-gallon drums? There's nothing wrong with that. Eventually, that is something I'm going to move to. But, you know, this mentality, you've got to buy these big old giant drums and whatnot and put this stuff away. And, you know, in reality, it is the little small stuff like that, because now I have water stacked up really high now. And the reason why this is so good is my kids can help with things like 55-gallon drums and all that other stuff. And those are good. I love that as well. But where they can really help is that we throw all our bottles, we put them underneath a cabinet, and then during random points of the week when we've got time, I say, hey, kids, you guys want to help me out with this? You want to help me fill bottles? Yeah! They love it because they're with daddy. They get to spend some time with him, have fun with it. But at the same time, it's also, I mean, it's a wonderful time not only to be doing this, getting prepped, telling them why, but it's also good to tell them why. Why are we doing this? Hey, guys, we're doing this because just in case something happens, just in case we have fires come through, just in case a water main breaks. We had that a while back whenever we realized there was water underneath our house. Yeah. We went out to the water valve and we looked and we were just watching that meter just spin like a top. I mean, it was just going. And we're like, oh no. So we shut the water off and it wound up being about 4 days worth. And it, you know, first off, it was amazing. We pulled out that water that I'd started saving and it was amazing how much you went through. It's not just what you drink. It's also what you cook with. It's also what, I mean, the kids come in, they're filthy. You got to wash the junk off of them before you're going to let them hop into bed. And so, you know, I was amazed at how much water we blew through. But, I couldn't even begin to express the level of confidence that I had that we had started just one or two bottles at a time, getting the kids in there, helping me fill up, putting five or six bottles away a week. And it was amazing how much of a comfort it was, not just for me, but how the kids, when I told them that the water was down, we weren't going to be able to shower like we normally did, they just went, eh, no big deal.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, they weren't traumatized at all and everything else. When's the last time you had the power fail at your house?
Let's see. The last one was, I guess, probably about 3 months ago.
Yeah, how long was it out for?
Let's see. It was for about 2 hours, I think. They had a transformer that they went out to fix, and it popped. I actually got to watch it happen. It popped, and then we lost everything for about 2 hours.
Was it nighttime yet or just daytime?
Of course it was nighttime. It was about 6 o'clock, and it was during the time of the year where 6 o'clock is getting really dark here in Texas, and popped it, and I mean, it was pitch black in the house.
Okay, so what do you do for light?
We actually have a blackout bag that we started putting out together. The kids helped me, and we have just a little bag that when lights go out, we go snag it. It has tea lights in it. It has flashlights in it. It has batteries in it. It has rechargeable batteries in it. And then the kids each selected one flashlight that they wanted specifically, and we put their names on them, and we dumped all of those in there. So it's our blackout bag.
Okay, there you go. Another thing that works really good during blackout is you can go to Walmart and you can get 2-watt and 4-watt LED bulbs. Now, they say that 2 watts and 4 watts is their actual draw. They say equal to 25 or equal to 40 watts. But anyways, they're small. They're about $6 to $10 each. And 2 watts is nothing. You can put those, you can put your inverter on your car and not even start the car. You run the extension cable in the house. And you put one of those into a lamp and it just lights a room up like nothing.
Yeah.
And it works really, really good. It works better than a lantern does at providing light inside of the house. And the nice thing is you can turn it on, you can turn it off. You can run an extension cable up to the room, and they can have light in the room. If it's hot, like it is in Texas, you get a small fan. I mean, like a 6-inch fan that you'll find at Walgreens in the summertime for $9.95.
You know, I tell you what we did, Steve, just to get clever, and this was actually I was talking to my son Grant about this, and he's 4, mind you, and I was telling him about what we were doing with this, and I had been pricing, I think the Lights of America, the three pack of Lights of America, I think they're like 2.5 watts, and I was looking at those, and Grant asked me, he said, Dad, what's that? So I thought, okay, here's a good opportunity to talk to him about this, and I was telling him about that, and we were actually visiting about the power outage that we had a few months before, and I was talking about, you know, I was asking him, what do you think we should do with these, you know, asking kids questions. What do you think we should do with these? And he sat there for a minute and he looked up, and my wife loves plants. She loves plants. She loves to, you know, buy plants, and she likes to buy the hooks that you screw into the roof, and then she hangs them inside the house and whatnot, and she has plants all over the place. Well, he looked up and said, you know, Dad, maybe we could hang them from those hooks. And at first I was like, oh, that's a clever idea. And then I stopped and I started thinking, you know, if we were gonna power it, like say the inverter from our car, we're gonna start the car, we're gonna run the extension cord in there, right? And then we're gonna get these lights and string them through the house. I started thinking, not a bad idea at all, because we've got hooks already in place that have a secondary function already that we could run this extension cord with these lights and then hang them up there. I don't know if I would have thought of that. And yet getting my kiddo involved with this, I mean, it was a brilliant idea.
And what works really great for that is there's also at Walmart or Home Depot or Lowe's, there are sockets. And you just screw in the light bulb into the socket, and then you plug it into the wall. And it lights up. And so there instantly is your lamp. Now, you don't need to plug it into the wall in this case. What you do is, while you're at Walmart, you buy the 15-foot extension cords, which are just two-prong extension cords. And they're like $2.39 a piece. And again, you're running low power through these things, so you can run as many of them as you want. And you go from hook to hook to hook to hook to hook throughout the house or the room with these 15-foot extension cords.
And
you just take your light bulb that is on that socket, and you just plug it into the extension cord. And now you got that LED bulb hanging from that hook. And it makes for a really good power system. I like using lightweight extension cords running through the house because they're modular, they're lightweight, they're inexpensive. You can run from room to room to room with them real easily. You don't have to run orange cabled extension cords to every room all the time, because you're not drawing a lot of power. You're just drawing single-digit watts or double-digit watts. You're not trying to run a blender, or you're not trying to run an electric chainsaw. So you don't need to have the cords that big.
I like that. I like that a lot. You know, what's interesting, again, is it all came from a four-year-old. You know, here I am, a full-grown adult, and I hadn't thought of that. My four-year-old comes up with it in about 5 seconds. Well, Steve, we are about out of time for today. Anything else that you wanted to hit on before we wrap it up?
Yeah, there was one thing in cooking. One of the things I like to make is fried doughs, like Indian fry bread or donuts. And you can take the same dough recipe you use for tortillas, you can ball it up, and you can take that and put it into hot oil. And then there is no faster way of cooking than food in hot oil. It is, I mean, literally, you're going to have something fried and coming out of there in 30 seconds. And what you do is, you get a small pan of oil, you put it onto your stove, and you got the tongs and the strainer basket, and you go get a candy thermometer, and you put the candy thermometer into the oil, and you keep it, the oil, between 350 and 400 degrees. So any of the doughs that you're making can pretty much go into the oil, and they come out, and you put cinnamon and sugar on them. This can be a Sunday morning treat. This can be something that you do. But it's a very quick way of making food in an emergency, in a disaster, with very little power, with very little effort, and something that is delicious, you know, sinfully delicious, that kids are going to like and enjoy. So that's one of the things we skipped over on the food. There's three ways of making bread I kind of teach people. There's the bread maker, there is the white flour tortilla, and then there is frying dough in hot oil. And between those three ways, you're going to be making food instantaneously. The other thing that you mentioned was Amazon Prime. And I love Amazon.
I do too.
I love Amazon Prime. I even buy my cat food from Amazon Prime because it's cheaper than Walmart, and it shows up in 2 days at my doorstep. Yep. And I didn't have to spend time or diesel fuel to go get it. I told thousands of people 3 days before Sandy hit that it was going to hit and there were going to be people without power for over a week. So I guarantee it. I took a picture of the map of the path. I put it on my Facebook page. I emailed it to 30,000 people. And I even drew lines saying, you know, this is the danger zone, this is the area is going to be affected. Everyone said it was going to be a big storm. So it was 1,000 miles across, literally. So even if you're sitting there on day three or day four, and you know this thing is coming 3 days, 3 days out, 4 days out, Amazon Prime will ship you anything that you order overnight for $4.
Yeah.
So literally you can go and get an AGM battery, and which is an absorbed glass mat battery. It can be shipped by a UPS. You can get this. I talk about making battery banks in one of my TSP shows. It's
good
a,
show.
It's at battery1234.com. So I got solar1234.com. I got battery1234.com. And I teach you how to make a mobile battery bank. But even if you went to Amazon and bought a generator, I got generators listed up on solar1234.com that are great generators. I mean, and it is a 60-pound generator. They will ship it to you overnight for $4.
Yeah.
So when everyone else is raided the store is out of flashlights, the store is out of batteries, it's out of bread, it's out of everything. And you can order an inverter and a battery or a generator or any of the tools I talk about in my other classes on from TSP that are on the websites I told you about. You can order them, and this is on day 3 before the storm, day 2 before the storm. They're at your doorstep.
Yeah, yeah.
And you didn't have to go fight for anything. UPS just dropped the thing off and said, here you go. And I think Jack and I were talking about this, and it's a fabulous tool. It's a fabulous thing that people just completely overlook, that UPS will drop it off for me, you know, before the storm gets here.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good. It's how much is it again? It's like what? It's like $79 a month? I mean, a year? Isn't that right?
It's $75 or $79 a year. Yeah.
Well, I tell you, it pays for – I mean, if you get Christmas gifts with, you know, for somebody and you wait till that last minute and you need it now, let me tell you, it'll pay itself off in 2 or 3 gifts. I mean, in terms of what it would cost to overnight stuff, it's fantastic. And then they've even got the Amazon Prime videos and shows that you can watch on there for free. I highly recommend everybody gets one. Drop the approximate $80. Get it, because, I mean, not only can it be just wonderful on entertainment value, but then also on a preparedness, you know, situation, it's fantastic. Yep. I love it.
All the shipping, everything you buy from them is 2-day shipping, and it's all free.
Free.
When you're a Prime. Yeah.
Exactly. No, great suggestion. All right. Anything else before we wrap it up, Steve?
No, wonderful. I'm happy to be here and happy to share with you guys some of the different things and tips and tricks, and especially the way you wanted it geared towards children. I'm happy to be here and to share these with you. I gave out several of my websites. Let's see, the only other website, StephenHarris.net, StevenHarris.net. That'll lead you to any of my other websites. That'll lead you to the website with the books on energy. It'll lead you to Solar1234 and Battery1234, and you'll be able to see what I have and more background on me and anything. Plus, you can, my email's up there. You can contact me and ask me any questions you so desire. I generally respond pretty quickly. And you're welcome to write to me and ask me questions, and I'll point you in the right direction of what I have that can be of assistance to you.
Sounds good, Steve. Thank you so much. Guys, we'll also make sure that we have links to every one of these from Solar and Battery1234.com and everything that Steven just mentioned in the show notes today, so you can go and check them out as well. It has his Facebook page. I highly recommend get involved in all of those. There's great stuff flying around there. Well, Steve, thanks again for being on this show. That does wrap up this episode of the Family Podcast Network, helping you work with your tough kids and even those that aren't. Hope you guys have a great weekend. Enjoy your holiday this week. Make sure you guys be careful if you're traveling. And if nothing else, we'll see you guys next week.